to May 1997 this week, and that's when the cricketing world was turned on its head by an Australian billionaire called Kerry Packer. He'd been trying to get hold of TV cricket rights, and he didn't. He failed, and so he launched a plan, a secret plan, to sign up the world's best players for his own breakaway tournament. It tore cricket apart. I spoke earlier to one of the six English players who actually signed up for World Series cricket, Warwickshire batsman Dennis Amiss, who told me how he was invited to a secret meeting with Kerry Packer.
I thought, well, I'll go and have a chat and see what it's all about. I just felt that, you know, nobody come and talk to me. And I suppose being an England player at the time and doing well in the England setup, I just felt, oh, gosh, you know, I felt a bit hurt that maybe somebody hadn't contacted me.
Why haven't they touched me up for this job?
Yeah, absolutely. So I thought, well, I'll go and find out all about it. I met Kerry Packer in the Dorchester and we had a chat. Richie Beno was there. And Richie was one of my heroes that I'd followed, and I knew him. And he came over very well and said they'd like me to join, and told me all the ins and outs of it. We had a chat for, I suppose, probably, you know, what must be the best part of 2 hours.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I went home and to think about it and discuss it with the family.
Yeah. I mean, I guess cricketers weren't terribly well paid at that stage, so the money was number one, was it?
Yes, and I'd played a fair bit of international cricket at the time, and I thought, well, you know, I'd been in and out of the side a little bit, so was this an opportunity of securing the future for the family? And so I was, thinking that way. There was some nice money. Obviously, the bigger name you were, the more money you were going to get. So. But at least, we weren't paid very well in those days.
Yeah, trouble is, it kind of split everything, didn't it, for a start? I mean, I know nowadays it seems almost antique to think of the way cricket was, but the way cricket was, I guess you divided the dressing room and you divided your mates in county cricket.
Yeah, it did. It split the cricketing world down the middle, and those people who were supporting you, they were in my team, and obviously Warwickshire were very strong in supporting the Test and County Cricket Board as it was in those days.
Yeah.
They had many of the committee on committees down at Lords, and they took a very strong line against me. I was on my own. Alvin Kalicharan was asked to join as well. He was a Warwickshire player, the West Indian batsman, but there was a little bit of whether he wanted to or whether he didn't. But yes, it was a very, very difficult time. And during that season that it was difficult, the best place for me was to be out in the middle. And I was very lucky. I had one of my best seasons ever when Warwickshire were saying that there was no contract for me in the future because of my involvement with World Series cricket and Kerry Packer.
You were now in a blaze of glory. Yeah, when the World Series itself started, as far as I remember, it didn't work for a bit, did it?
No, it got off to a very slow start, and I think that Kerry Packer kept putting more money into it. We couldn't play at the traditional cricket grounds in Australia, so we played at Australian rules grounds, and they had a groundsman, except they call them curators out there, who made wickets in trays just on the outer of the ground,
yeah.
And then they floated them across. They dug a hole in the middle of these Australian grounds, and then they dropped the pitch in.
Did that work?
Dropping pitches.
Yeah,
they did.
They
were good pitches.
Were they?
They were very good. There was some terrific cricket, Peter, that was played, and some marvellous matches. But we didn't have an England side. We were the World 11. So
yeah.
We had six England players, and then we had people like Zahir Abbas from Pakistan, Mushtaq Mohammed, Eddie Barlow from South Africa, Garth LaRue, Graham Pollock, Imran Khan.
Some great names you had. And that's when it all started, coloured clothing and different coloured cricket balls and the whole thing. I mean, he bust all the rules, didn't he?
He did. There was going to be night cricket, and they could do this because they had floodlights at all these Australian rules grounds. So we played at the VFL Park where we practiced in Melbourne, and they found that under floodlights at night on a coloured television, the yellow ball which we'd started with was very difficult to pick up. So then they decided to try white balls, and the white balls with black sight screens and coloured clothing worked. But it took a long time to take off, I suppose a month or more, maybe a little bit longer. And then suddenly they came out with these ditties, come on, Aussies, come on, come on.
Come on, Aussie, come on, come on. Come on, Aussie, come on, come on.
And it took off from there and it never looked back.
Yeah, and in the end, Kerry Packer got to broadcast the cricket and the whole thing, the world moved on. And just one other thing I want to ask you about, Dennis, before we let you go. I mean, we're still talking about helmets, and Alistair Cook is, you know, likes one helmet and not the other. But you really were one of the first movers with saying, I want to wear a helmet, weren't you? But they, I guess they were a bit hot and heavy in those days.
Yeah. Well, I talked to Tony Gregg about it and my other colleagues in World Series cricket, the England players, people like Derek Underwood and Alan Knott and Bobby Woolmer. And Tony said, Kerry would welcome innovation, Dennis. He said, if you want to try a helmet, bring one out. And I took a motorcycle helmet made in Birmingham. made of Kevlar with a polyplastic visor that would take a double-barrel shotgun from 10 paces. So I thought it'd take a cricket ball from 22, but it was so hot out there, and I can remember playing up in Brisbane, and my gosh, it was so hot and humid that I nearly passed out wearing it. But David Hooks got hit from a bouncer without the helmet, and he was supping through a straw for 6 weeks. And on his comeback match after that, he said, "Can I borrow your helmet?" And he used it. And the first ball he had was from Andy Roberts, the same bowler had hit him 6 weeks previous and broken his jaw. And he hooked it out the ground for six. And Richie said, "That's a great defining moment." And suddenly, other players wanted them. Tony Gregg wanted them. David Hooks wore it. And Mustaq Mohammed, Barry Richards, great names. And the only problem was we had four runouts in one of the first matches. And Richie picked it up. He said, "You know, these runouts, I don't think they can hear the calls from one another because there's no holes in the earpieces." And they interviewed Alan Knott, who came off, who was the fourth. And they said, he still got his helmet on. And they said to Alan Knott, "You were run out. Was that because you couldn't hear the calls? There's no holes in the earpieces." He said, "You'll have to speak up." He said, "Some silly so-and-so forgot to put holes in his ear." And of course, that silly so-and-so was me, I'm afraid.
We're talking about a story from the past now. We call it I Was There. It's fascinating. Some of these stories we get from I Was There are fascinating. If you go onto the website, the Five Live Daily page, you see some of the things we've covered, everything from the Mods and Rockers battles to the collapse of Barings Bank. And since the cricketers have just started their first test today, we thought we'd go back to May 1997, when the cricketing world was turned on its head by a flamboyant Australian called Kerry Packer. Now, Kerry had tried to buy the TV rights to Australian test and domestic cricket. He was knocked back and then launched a plan to sign up the world's best players for a breakaway tournament called World Series Cricket. In so doing, he declared war on the cricketing establishment.
They can say what they like about me. If they start to victimise the players who've placed their trust in me, at that point in time, it's an all-out scrap.
Yeah, all-out scrap. We're going to talk about the events and the legacy of that scrap in the company of Gideon Haig, who wrote The Cricket War, the inside story to that. I think Asif Iqbal is on the line already. We might be joined by Jim Maxwell. Earlier you heard us talking to Dennis Amis, so we've got some good people to help us on this. Gideon, if I could begin with you, it was a very bitter time for cricket, wasn't it? I mean, it tore things apart in England, and I guess in Australia too.
Well, of course, it was a battle over domestic television rights in Australia, which ramified beyond the shores. You know, yeah. Originally it was Kerry Packer's quest for exclusive television rights that engendered the crisis, and it was the resistance of the cricketing authorities to dealing with him that made him escalate those original ambitions. And it was ultimately cricket that declared war on Kerry Packer by banning his players, declaring them disapproved persons, which resulted in Packer taking the ICC and the TCCB to court and winning, which was the first breach in the establishment's defences.
Yeah, in the end, he got what he wanted, of course. He got to cover cricket. He got a lot of stars as well. Asif Iqbal, former batsman, of course, was one of those stars. Asif Iqbal, thanks for your time. Can you tell me how were you recruited? When and how were you approached, and why did you say yes?
Yes, very interesting times those were. And to be honest, you know, I felt quite, in a way, flattered that I was considered to be one of the best to get the offer made by the World Series Cricket. Pakistan team was touring West Indies at that time, and I got a call from Tony Gregg, and he said that he's got some lawyers with him and he would like to have a chat with me without telling me what it's all about. So we met him. I went and I met him, and he said that there's a chap called Kerry Packer in Australia, and he's planning a World Series cricket in the winter. And would I be interested? And, you know, they laid down the terms and conditions. And seeing that, I said, yes, of course, it sounds good. And to be very honest, I think the way cricketers were being treated financially in those days, yeah. in particular from Pakistan, it was a huge, huge offer, which I couldn't refuse.
A lot of people. And I'll come back to you in a moment, if I may, as if Iqbal and indeed to Gordon Haig, because the third of our trio of guests on Kerry Packer has just joined us, actually, Jim Maxwell, who was working, of course, for ABC, and you still do work for them, don't you, Jim?
Yes. Yeah, they've still got me.
Yeah, well, you're an institution, mate. Tell us about your memories of those times.
Well, my memory of it specifically is being in Kerry Packer's office at the official announcement where he had Alston Robertson and the rest of the henchmen involved in signing up the players alongside him. Now, I remember in particular he had a massive vat of cigarettes in front of him because he was a chain smoker in those days. And all of the usual things occurred about the announcement of these wonderful players and what a superb series it was going to be. And then he asked for questions from the floor. And what I do remember is Jim Bonner, who worked in current affairs for the ABC, grabbed his opportunity and said to Kerry Packer, "Mr. Packer, World Series cricket has been likened to World Championship wrestling. What are the similarities?" Well, he just put the microphone down and Kerry blew up for 3 minutes. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, well, Kerry was quite a competitive, is quite a competitive sort of figure, isn't he, really? Yeah, I'll come back to you in a moment, if I may, Jim. Mm-hmm. Lovely to hear from you, and thank you for that. Gideon, when it all started, and I'm going to put the same question to Asif Iqbal in a minute, when it all started, it didn't go well, first of all, did it? Initially, he had real trouble getting the public to follow it.
Well, the public, of course, had come was very fond of the idea that the players were out there representing their countries for love and honour, and they found it difficult to understand how even the best players in the world might try harder or play cricket of a more intense quality for money. The idea of money being a motivation for players was something that was quite a hard sell to the public. In the second season of World Series cricket, Packer did something quite innovative. He decided to tug on the patriotic chain himself and promoted specifically the Australian team as the bona fide article. He had the first great promotional campaign in cricket history, Come On Aussie, Come On, wall-to-wall salesmanship. And with the glamour of that particular Australian side, full of so many characters as well as star players, they began to make the establishment game look a rather paltry and an unsuccessful.
Yeah, I just want to pause just for a second because in 2012, the Australian TV company Southern Star made a drama about the story called How's That? Kerry Packer's War. And there's a clip showing how the players reacted when they were showed some of the different things they'd be required to do. For instance, the coloured kit that they would be wearing.
I am not wearing this.
You'll be the only guy in the field that's not Hubie.
Well, you look ridiculous.
Yeah, it looks like your mum's pyjamas.
I see, was it really like that? How did you react?
Well, to be very honest, I think all the labels that were put on those coloured clothing, things like pyjama games and that it's circus and that it's not going to be serious cricket, because we had slogans like Big Boys Play at Night, T-shirts, things like that. But to be very honest, I think, and to be fair, whatever we did as players at that time, the current crop of cricketers, they need to be thankful to the World Series cricket and Kerry Packer for the rewards that they are reaping now. Everything that Kerry introduced, the coloured clothing, the night cricket, white ball, black side screen, playing cricket at night, all that has now, what they were at that moment, the officials and the authorities were resisting, now they are really reaping the rewards out of it.
Yeah, Jim, everything changed, really. When we look at the modern game, I was watching the Indian League the other night and thinking, you know, that's where it started, really, wasn't it? They just progressed on from that idea, really.
Well, also the idea of covering the game from each end rather than one end, which, you know, the ABC traditionally, a bit like the BBC in the years before, had covered the game just from one end of the ground. So you're looking
forgotten that, yeah.
So the changes were not only in the presentation of the game, day-night cricket, playing in pyjamas, coloured clothing, the white ball, but the way the game was shown to the public on television, which after all was going to be the major money spinner for Kerry and, well, for the game, as we've seen since then, in the direction that it's headed. So it was not just on the field, but with David Hill in particular involved with the production for Channel 9, bringing some innovation to the way the game was covered.
Yeah, Gideon, I guess Kerry Packer died, what, in 2005, was it, about something around there? I mean, he did, you know, he is the man really responsible for the modern game, I guess. Is that fair to say?
Well, and the other thing is that the modern game kind of made Kerry Packer in a way. Otherwise, he'd be just another media magnate. The fact is that that he made over the sport that matters to Australians above all, and turned himself into a kind of a force of nature, a public figure in Australia. Mm. You know, when he started on World Series cricket, he was a man in his late 30s with two young children who'd inherited a large media organisation from his father. None of the players who signed with World Series Cricket had actually even heard of Kerry Packer. But my word, cricket came to understand Kerry Packer both as an individual and as a concept in years to come.
Yeah, believe it or not, I worked for Frank Packer back in the days. A £10 pom in Sydney, working for Frank Packer's Daily Telegraph at the time. Yeah, he was a tough man. Kerry Packer, Jim, was a tough man. I mean, it's kind of very much in the kind of Australian image, rough, tough guy, if necessary.
Tough, but very loyal to people who work for him and supported him, as we've seen over the years. And that continues in some ways today with, Ian Chappell is probably the last, along with Bill Lowry, of those commentators that were employed in the early part of World Series cricket. So he was very loyal to people that went with him. And Richie Benno would attest to that if he was still with us.
Yeah, I just might just pause for a second and hear one or two tributes about Kerry Packer. He died age 68. John Howard, who was the Australian Prime Minister at the time, and Richie Benno were among those who paid tribute.
Many things will be said about Kerry Packer, and at a time like this, there's a tendency sometimes to throw clichés around. Remarks such as great Australian, larger than life, are sometimes used where they are not appropriate. But in the case of Kerry Packer, both of those descriptions are entirely appropriate. He was a great Australian. He was a larger-than-life character.
People can think back and say, oh, God, 1977, that's a long time ago. Can't remember what happened then. That was when cricket changed and for the better. And it is because of what happened then that cricket is so strong now.
Richie Benno. Asif Iqbal, what did your fellow cricketers think about it? What was the bitterness for you?
No, not really. I think earlier on, when the year I was captain of Kent, the year Kerry announced his WSC, and most of the players from Kent, not most, some of the players also joined Kerry Packer, like Alan Knott and Derek Underwood. They were also there. No, I wouldn't say that, but the one thing for sure, in the first year, there was kind of some negative reaction, but then it slowly dawned, not only on the players, but also on, I think, administrators around the world, that this is something, need to be looked into seriously. And I think, as Jim was saying, other than introducing night cricket and introducing coloured clothing, all that carried without any doubt the WSC, showed the world how to telecast, having 14 cameras on each side, and it was an amazing, amazing production, no doubt about it. But one thing I would like to add to the word loyalty when we were talking about Kerry, no doubt whatsoever, he was really, really very passionate about his beliefs and about his people who worked for him, and we as cricketers who were following the so-called circus, WSC. He was, you know, and he rewarded the players who were loyal to him. And we saw that, you know, he took TCC, BICC or MCC in those days to the court, fought the case for the players, won the case. He was very proud of it. And I know of some players, including myself, that we had just verbal contract for an extension of another 3 years, which we never signed, although the World Series cricket was abandoned after the first 2 years when Kerry got the rights. He honoured those contracts.
Right, that's interesting. There's one other thing I just wanted to hear before I go back to Gideon and Jim. That's the song. World Series Cricket even had its own song written in 1978 to publicise the second season.
Lily's pounding down like a machine. Pascal's making divots in the green. Marsh is taking wickets. Hooksy's clearing pickets. And the Chapel's eyes have got that killer gleam.
Jim Maxwell, what do you make of that?
Brilliant.
it's just something that keeps you going when you think about that period of Australian cricket. The crowd got behind it. Yes, it was a very catchy tune, very clever. That was all part of what Kerry was about at the time. And, of course, when he did get the rights to cover the game, when they... smoke the peace pipe, of course, he got the rights to do all that kind of marketing and creativity around the game as well. So it was a significant victory when they shook hands after WSB folded.
Yeah, and Gideon, the game moved on in a way it had to develop. If it were just Test cricket now in the county game in this country, we'd be hopeless, really. Thank goodness, in a way, it did transform itself and move with the times.
Well, one caveat on that is that Kerry Packer didn't covet cricket, or Kerry Packer didn't sort of revolutionise the moribund game. Cricket was exceptionally popular in the mid-1970s, commercially underexploited, but immensely popular nonetheless. Hmm. And it was precisely because it was popular that Kerry Packer understood its commercial value and pursued it and wanted to make it his own. So, you know, Kerry Packer revolutionised and resurfaced the game, and he certainly caused the institution of the One Day International to go forth and multiply. But he was taking advantages of the game's existing strength and the game's existing talent. You had a generation of incredibly exciting and charismatic players, Isaac Iqbal being one of them, that Kerry could sign up who were underpaid and ready to defect.
Yeah. Well, last word to you, Asif Iqbal, in a way. Good times for you, those were, I guess.
Great times, very fond memories. And I think everybody who was a part of WSC had a great time playing cricket and knowing that they're going to be part of history.
Yeah. Well, can I say thank you to all three? It's been fascinating. In a way, I'm sorry we don't have longer to talk to you all, but that's Gideon Haigh, who wrote The Cricket War and the inside story of Kerry Packer's World Series cricket. Commentator Jim Maxwell, slightly dodgy phone line, but we heard him pretty loud and clear, who was working for Kerry Packer's rival broadcaster ABC and still does. And then finally you heard from Asif Iqbal, the former Pakistan batsman who played both seasons of World Series cricket. And earlier in the day, actually, we had a chance as well to hear from Dennis Amis, who had some great stories to tell of his times in world cricket. Almost the favourite story of the whole day really comes from Dennis Amis talking about helmets, which he really was the pioneer. He was one of the first to use helmets, and in those early days, he wore a motorcyclist crash helmet because that was the only thing available. And in fact, they were so successful that other cricketers took them up, which resulted, among other things, in one particular match in four runouts, including Alan Knott. Because nobody could hear each other when they were calling for runs or not. In fact, when Alan Knott came off the field and was asked whether the helmets were responsible, he said he couldn't hear the question because there were no holes in the side of the helmet. Anyway, that's it from me.